So what I'd like to do today is to call your attention to a very unusual note in the Torah that actually Jason, who read it, and I were talking about. It's called a shalshelet. And a shalshelet is literally means a chain. That's what the word shalshelet means. But really, when you read a shalshelet in the Torah, what you do is you go up and down the scale three times. It's the longest note in the Torah. You go, three times. I'll spare you. One was enough. But you get the idea. And the question is, for such a rare note, since it's literally only used a few times in the Torah, what does it mean? And what I want to do today is look at three instances of the shalshelet, ending with the one that we heard this morning, because maybe if we understand the other two, we can understand why it occurs this morning. And the first time that it occurs, you will find on page 107, I believe it is. Yes, page 107. This is the city of Sodom. God is about to destroy the city of Sodom. Abraham says, what if there are, 50 righteous people, 40 righteous people? He gets God down to what number? 10. Yes, can I ask that people just be held at the door for the moment until we're done? Thanks. Just let everybody can come in. I just want them to wait so they don't. Thank you. Page 107 at the very top now. Look at this. God says, up, take your wife and your two remaining daughters, lest you be swept away because of the iniquity of the city. Who's God talking to? Anyone know? Lot. He's saying to Lot, listen, this place is going to be destroyed. You had better get out of here. Now, what would you expect Lot to do? Get out of there, right? I mean, if I told you the building's about to come down, I don't think I'd have to tell you twice. You'd get out of here. But what do we know from Jewish history about people who see warning signs in their cities that they've lived in and their parents have lived in or that they feel comfortable in? Do they get out right away?
No.
It's much harder than you might think. We all know that. We think, sure, we would get out right away. But history tells us that that's not how people react. If tomorrow someone said, Los Angeles is going down the tubes, most of us would stay. We think it's going to be all right. We'll get through it. The city has resources. There are a lot of good people here. In other words, we would hesitate. Now, look at the second line of the Hebrew on that page, page 107. Look at the second word, okay? You see above that word, that little squiggle? Above the second word, it's right above the mem. It's above the next to last letter of the second word, the word that occurs right after 16. See it there? That's the shalshelet. That's the up and down note. And what word is it on? Vayit ma ma, which means, and he hesitated. So the shalshelet is an indicator of indecision. Lot should go, but he's not quite ready to go, so he hesitates. And because it is for the first time when it's used in the Bible, it's paired with that word, and he hesitates, we now know what a shalshelet means. So when we find it again, we will understand it. Okay, you with me? The shalshelet, when we find it, means the person hesitated. Now let's go beyond our parsha and look at page 239. At the second example that I want to offer to you. Here we're talking about Joseph. Joseph goes to Egypt. Joseph ends up in the house of Potiphar. And Potiphar has a beautiful wife. Not a faithful wife, but a beautiful wife. Not always the same thing. And in fact, we know that she's not faithful because what does she do? She takes a look at Joseph, this sophisticated society woman, and says to him, sleep with me. Now, Joseph, remember, is a young guy. He's just been sold into slavery and ended up here. He's been alone, probably never been with a woman in his life. This is the wife of his master, who's presumably, as I said, a sophisticated and beautiful woman. And Joseph, look at now the third line up from the top. in the third line up from the bottom in the Hebrew, right after the eight. It's the third word in the third line up. You see it? See that little squiggle above the word? The second shalshelet. And it says, Vayimaein, and he refused. But there's refusing and refusing. This indicates hesitation. In other words, he refused, but it wasn't so easy. He didn't just say, no, I'd never do that. He goes, well, Potiphar will probably never know. She's, after all, the wife of my master. I'd hate to disappoint her. He goes back and forth, but in the end, Joseph refuses. But the shalshelet is the only way that we would know that he didn't just refuse easily. He didn't just say, nah. He had a hard time. So for the second time, we see that the shalshelet indicates a certain uncertainty. Can you have a certain uncertainty? An uncertainty of behavior. Now let's go to today's parsha. And this time you will find it on page 132. The very last line. Now, what's the situation here? And this is why I took you through this whole tour of the shalshelet in Genesis, because this is actually a very difficult one to figure out. Eliezer, or it actually doesn't name him in this story, but Abraham's servant, okay, his right-hand man, he sends him off to get a wife for his son Isaac. Okay? So Eliezer goes off to get a son for his master's wife, Isaac, and he says, you know, he makes a whole long speech about if someone comes out and they do this and they do that, and on and on and on, and who appears? Rivka. Now look at the paragraphs. Let's start with 10. Then the servant took 10 of his master's camels, I'm at verse 10, that second paragraph on page 132, and set out, taking with him all the bounty of his master, and he made his way to Aram Naharaim, to the city of Nahor. He made the camels kneel down by the well outside the city at evening time, at the time when the women came out to draw water. And he said, God of my master Abraham, grant me good fortune this day. The question is, why does he hesitate? Because if you look at the last line of the Hebrew of that page, Vayomer, the first word of that line, which means and he said, has the shalshelet above it, which is very strange. Why should Eliezer hesitate to say, please God, give me good fortune? Now, one answer, which is not the answer that I'm going to offer to you. Actually, you know what? Let me ask you first. Why do you think Eliezer might hesitate? But you're going to have to say it loud enough or raise your hand, because the mumble isn't going to cut it. Yes. I can't hear you. He didn't think he deserved it. That's a good thought, that he didn't think he deserved it, although, after all, ultimately he's doing it for Abraham. But maybe he feels unworthy. Other thoughts? Yes. Shh. I'm sorry, go ahead. Wait. I called on this gentleman. He was afraid of what? He was just afraid. He was out by himself, he was afraid. Joseph. He didn't think he was doing the right thing. How? Why wouldn't he think he was doing the right thing? Hold it. Wait, you got to raise your hand. When a couple people talk, it's impossible to hear. Yeah, Don. Maybe he was worried that he would make a mistake. It's the unworthy, afraid thing. Yes. He didn't believe it could happen. One of the answers, and this is not the answer actually that I'm going to give, is sort of ties all these together, which is he's about to say, God, do this for me, and he's hesitant to make one of those prayers that tells God what to do. You know, it's a little tricky to say, I mean, he's Eliezer, he's not Abraham after all, and even if he's doing it for Abraham, it's a little bit of chutzpah to say, God, this is what I need you to do for me right now. But I read a much, actually, more interesting answer. I'm not saying that one's wrong, but I read a much more interesting answer, which is, if Isaac doesn't find a wife, then who's going to end up inheriting a lot of Abraham's property? His right-hand man. He's got a family. How much can Isaac really use of that property if he doesn't have a wife and kids? So maybe This is about, like Lot, it's about self-interest. It's not about humility. Maybe the indication is he's thinking, you know what, if I don't pray, I could end up a rich man. But in the end, of course, just like Lot and just like Joseph, he does the right thing. And he does pray. And he doesn't end up inheriting. Isaac does. But I thought that it was so interesting to see the very subtle way in which the Torah gives us this message. It doesn't say Eliezer didn't know what to do or thought he might be rich or was afraid of the prayer. It just, you have to pay attention even to the notes. And that kind of specificity, that it's so careful, that's one of the reasons why it is that you can read the same verse, the same chapter over and over and over again for a lifetime, and you always find new things. It is a beautiful way to continue to explore the same thing, to get deeper and deeper and deeper. And in this case, we see in this very subtle indication, in this note, that maybe Eliezer had ambivalence about his mission, as I think all of us can identify with. We all have ambivalence. In fact, I'll leave you with a very little known but important Jewish law. If you have a wealthy parent who dies and leaves you a lot of money, when someone dies, what are you supposed to say? Do you know what blessing you say? When you hear of a death, Baruch Dayan Emet, blessed be the righteous judge. But if you have a wealthy parent who dies, then according to Jewish law, you are allowed to say first, Baruch Hatov HaMetiv, blessed is God who is good and does good. Now, why would you say that? Because the tradition realizes that you're not going to be able to not think about the fact that you're about to inherit a lot of money. And if you say Baruch Dayan Emet, you'll feel guilty. So instead, the tradition says it's okay to say I'm grateful for what I'm going to get, and then you can mourn with a full heart. You don't have to pretend that you're not glad to get the money. You put that out of the way, and then you can mourn. In other words, the tradition recognizes that we're all split creatures. We're all ambivalent. We all have contradictory drives. And sometimes it's buried right here in the Shalshalet. Okay, let's bring everyone in.